Steve, why don't you say a few words? Because really, you're the father who went to the ADA and got them interested in doing this. So maybe you can say a few words about that.
The challenge we have is to move people from unaware to aware. And that's not only our parents and who are seeing their children with these medical challenges, but it's also our colleagues and our colleagues across all facets of medicine. So we think, well, aren't there screeners available? And as we sat around the room in 2018 with the leaders of medicine, everybody who cared about children's breathing was there in the room at the ADA headquarters in 2018. And every one of them came on their own dime. Every one of them said yes when I invited them straight away. Dr. Simmons begged his way into the conference because I didn't really have a room for him. But then he made himself so valuable to us that I can't imagine this whole project without Dr. Jerry Simmons. He's just been a super fantastic supporter. So what our goal is to refocus airway issues from overweight old men where it started 45 years ago and think about it, the upstream problems. And this is the mechanism that's going to make that happen. So I can't imagine a better way to contribute to overall health by dentists, by dental hygienists, by everybody than to address this early in life. Well, how do we address it early in life if we don't even know it's happening? And that's where the CGASP project comes in. Because when we have this protocol and we can make parents aware, we can make colleagues aware, then the next question is, well, what are we going to do about it? And that opens up those educational avenues, it opens up treatment avenues, and mostly it opens up the eyes of everybody in that sees kids, from parents to professionals, that breathing is critical from early days. And when we pay attention to that and change that trajectory, then we change the health span of whole communities. And imagine the impact. I'm thrilled about the progress so far. I'm thrilled about the 2017 policy statement. I'm happy that we took up the mantle to say, let's do something about how. And now we're working on that. Obviously, I wish it was done 5 years ago, but today is today. And so we have 112 people online right now saying, let's move, let's go. So that's my foundation on this one. And I want us dentists primarily to be the first ones to recognize breathing problems and help people become great breathers for a lifetime.
And Jerry, can I get like 2 minutes from you?
Sure. Well, this is we've been at this project for a long time, and I'm the kind of person that doesn't like to give up. And it took a long time to come up with the questions and to whittle it down. And ultimately, the implementation is actually one layer even beyond what Howie had said. We ultimately want this to be implemented in the schools by school nurses. We wanted something very simple. I mean, there are other questionnaires that are already out there, and they take more time, they're longer. We're not trying to, this whole screening process is not intended to be whittled down to exactly what it's a screener. And we'll talk a little bit in the presentation. Lori is going to talk about screening. Screens have to be very sensitive, but not specific. And easy to implement, something real simple, boom. And so five questions, we whittled it down. And so we're going through a process where we have to validate. So right now we're going to be validating it against dental anatomy because the premise is that if you have a narrow mouth, that and small mouths, that means a small airway, and that's going to impact sleep and there'll be clinical manifestations. Well, we're going to do a study that requires a lot of clinicians, dentists, people that are doing dental medicine to be involved. And we're going to be validating it. You're going to hear more of the details of what's involved. We don't just need the abnormal, we need normal. So those that are here are motivated because you already know about airway, the impact it has on patients. But each of you know generalists, general pediatric dentists, general dentists that see pediatric patients. Once you get familiar, we need you to get them involved. even if it's only for 1 month, 2 months, whatever. We want normals in our database to show the differentiation of if it's there to be, you know, we're all preaching this, we're all talking about it, but now it's time to really take you know, some ownership of proving it in a systematic way, as unbiased as we can. Because if it's not valid, it's not going to withstand the test of time. And then we'll all be looked back as being unguided, you know, charlatans. But if the data is really there, if what we're doing really is true, let's prove it. Let's be systematic. And you all really should decide that you're going to put some time into being part of the process so we can get achieve that goal. And then we could look back and be proud of the change we've done in moving the needle to where we need to be.
There might even be people on this webinar tonight. They said, well, I don't really know that much about airway. I'm new to airway. It doesn't matter, because then you are just as important as anybody else, because it's not the level of knowledge of the person. It's that does the process work? Will this screening form go into anybody's office and work for everybody? That's why we need the widest range of people doing this. And the only thing we're going to ask is that if you do it, you really learn to do it properly, because as you said before, if we don't get good data coming in, then the study is not going to be good. And so let's turn this over to Gloria, because and then we can talk about these about the process. And please, if you have any questions, we so want to hear it, because our goal is to have 100 practices doing this, and to raise $100,000 to do this. So I would love to have every single person vying for the 100 spots on, and you know, if we get more than 100, we'll stretch it a little bit. So what? Okay, Gloria.
All right. Thank you.
You're on.
And thank you, Howie, Dr. C, Dr. Simmons, everyone for coming up with this. Okay. And I'm so happy we've been doing this in our practice. We started it in 2022. Now we're actually looking at measurements that can go along with this. So here, my first slide is about, you know, how to participate in it. Once you do click onto this, it'll ask you for what type of practice you have. So you choose here what type of practice you're in. If you're
PM, Gloria,
yes.
We're in play mode.
Yeah, I'm seeing your presenter mode. Can we see your?
Yeah. Hold on. Let me do use slideshow. Hold on. There we go. Is that better?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So you pick the type of practice you have, then you put in your name and the cell phone and email of the person who's coordinating all of this in your office. So as they talked about before, the ADA Children's Airway Initiative was started by the CAST, the Children's Airway Screener Task Force, and it's primarily a dental initiative working to enhance the diagnosis of OSA in children. But CAST does consist of clinicians with a variety of professional backgrounds, including several physicians. So it must be recognized that this CAST position is that the diagnosis of OSA must be established with by a physician, and treatment by a dentist should be in collaboration with a physician. So as Howie was saying, and we were, you know, everyone was saying before, many children are undiagnosed, but all children must be screened. So, you know, this is what we are using in our office right now, the PSQ, which is 22 questions, and it's a validated tool. Then you have the sleep disorders inventory for students, and it's 30 questions. But how great would it be to have something to catch all kids that are at risk for OSA? So there have been multiple CAST meetings, and they've come up with 5 categories of signs and symptoms. So the first category is about air pathway. The second is about breathing sounds. The third is sleep activities. The fourth is morning conditions, and the fifth is daytime function. So this is a 5-question tool. So the first one, let me move this over just a little bit. So here you can see supportive articles and how they came up with these questions. So other than when sick, does your child typically breathe with his or her mouth open, lips apart, either while awake or asleep? So on the actual questionnaire, which I'll show in just a little bit, it just asked, does your child frequently have any of the following? And so the first question is, are they mouth breathing, lips apart, either while awake or asleep? So they can choose either yes, no, or I don't know. And the next question is about breathing sounds. So that's the second category. So other than when sick, does your child sometimes snore, have pauses in breathing while sleeping, or does your child have noisy or difficult breathing while awake? So the condensed version says, you know, under the does your child have any of the following while sleeping or napping? Do they snore even slightly? So this is in this box over here on the right. Do they have noisy breathing, difficulty breathing, pauses, or gasping while breathing? So same thing, they can choose either yes, no, or I don't know. The third category is about the sleep activities. So it says, while sleeping, does your child frequently do any of the following, toss and turn? So I think Dr. Simmons was talking about earlier how they removed that question, actually. So here on the right side, you can see what the questions the parents are actually going to get. So it'll say, is the neck extended upwards when sleeping? Do they have restless sleep, frequent awakenings, grinding or clenching teeth during sleep? So same thing, yes, no, or I don't know. The fourth category is about morning conditions. So here on the right, you'll see what is actually on the questionnaire. It says, does your child frequently have, upon awakening, do they have dry mouth, sore or achy jaw? Do they have headaches, stuffy nose, difficulty awakening in the morning? So same thing, yes, no, I don't know. And then the last category is about daytime function. So we want to know, is there daytime sleepiness or tiredness, daily behavioral or emotional issues, difficulty paying attention, hyperactivity, or difficulty at school? So yes, no, I don't know. So these are the 5 questions that we just talked about. So to get the screener generator, to get these questions, once you sign up for, you know, becoming a part of this, you'll have your office name here in the first little this little square, then you'll have to have a patient ID number. So in our office, we can click an open dental and it'll just generate a patient ID. So we don't want any, there are no, you know, first or last names or anything like that. So you have to have an identifier. And then you have the 2 different emails. So the CGASP recipients email. So whoever's going to get the CGASP to give to the parents, or, and I'll show you in just a second, or you can have a QR code where the parents actually put their little phone on the QR code and it pops up with a questionnaire. And then there's another place for the measurement recipient's email. So this is for the person who will actually be putting in the measurements. Okay, so in our office, that is one of our dental hygienists who does this. She's in charge of that. On this page too, there is a sample letter that you can also use with parents. We were using this at first, but now you'll see the little pop-up that comes up. It pretty much explains to parents about the questionnaire and the reason why we're doing it. So once you fill that out, you'll get a questionnaire. So this is patient specific. So once we fill out the first screen, a QR code comes up that you can actually just give to the parents. And they can put their, you know, their phone on it and it'll come up with a questionnaire, or you can launch the questionnaire. Like in our office, we had an extra iPad laying around that we weren't using anymore. And so what Stephanie does is she'll click on launch questionnaire right there and then, and she'll just hand the patient the iPad to start filling it out. Or you can also even print out the questionnaire. So here are the questions that we just went over, and here is where I was talking about. So this is for ages 2 to 12, and it says on here, on this first little area, it says, it's developing the Children's General Airway Screening Protocol. This survey is in development and designed to collect clinical information and on the signs and symptoms associated with breathing disturbances. Subject identification is not stored in the CGASP database collected by the task force. The data may be used for research purposes. No clinical decisions are based on the survey results. And as this child's parent or legal guardian, by checking this box, you agree to participate in the survey described above. So that's the parents giving permission. So they click, I agree, and then they go ahead and click on start. And so here they do enter the patient's birthday, male or female, and then their relationship, and then click start again. So here are the questions. So this is what it actually looks like when the parents see the questionnaire. So does your child frequently have any of the following? So the questions, just like I talked about earlier, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 questions. And then it asks, how hard was it to complete this form? And almost everybody in our office has clicked easy. It literally takes 2 or 3 minutes. It's very, very simple for parents to fill out. And a lot of times what they'll do is they'll have the parent fill this out while they're waiting for the doctor to come and do the exam. So if they do click no, then that's it. If they click yes on any of these, then there are some additional questions that come up to see, why did they check yes? Is their neck extended upwards? Restless sleep. Like this is the example for the number 3, just to kind of, you know, pinpoint like why exactly did they choose yes? And then after they're finished with that, it says, thank you for completing. So once the parents finish doing that, they have to finish this little questionnaire before an email is sent to whomever in the office is doing the measurements or putting in the numbers for the measurements. So next things will be matched. Like these are anatomic associations, and we'll go through these. So this is the email that will be received. And then we click on this link to fill everything in. So you can also...
Can I interrupt for a second? We have a question in the chat box that says, do you want this for international offices as well, or is this mainly just for the US? Do we know that?
Dr. Simmons? Is Dr. Simmons here?
Sorry, I'm having dinner.
Dr. I don't know the answer to that question.
No, yeah, it's okay. It's international, it's fine.
Okay, great. Sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So this is the email. And then let me get back here. So you can also print it out. So when you print it, this is what it looks like. You know, it has all these numbers. So this is nice for people who want to fill out things like on a clipboard. And then later on, they can use this to put in the numbers. So this is that. And then, so this is what the actual questionnaire looks like online. So this is how, when we do it, it looks like this. So what we want to know first is what type of dentition are they in? Are they in primary dentition, all baby teeth? Are they in mixed dentition? Do they have both baby teeth and permanent teeth, or are they in permanent dentition? So if they click yes, that they are in primary dentition, first question is, what type of molar relationship do they have? And for the deciduous or primary molar relationship, we're just looking at, are we distal step, yes or no, which is essentially like class 2, but for baby teeth. So distal step, yes or no. Then let's see here. If you click on permanent dentition, then it'll show, you know, are they in class 1, edge to edge, class 2, or class 3? Then if we're in mixed dentition, we look at first, and then it comes up with a question that will ask, are upper and lower permanent first molars in occlusion? Okay, so we want to make sure those teeth are touching, that they're in occlusion. If they are not, let's say the permanent molars are just barely erupting, you would click no. And then it asks you what the primary molar relationship is. So that's when we want to know yes or no, are they distal step? If the first and the first permanent molars are in occlusion, then we go to permanent molar relationship. So class 1, edge to edge, class 2, or class 3. Then the next question is there any anterior, lower anterior crowding? So that will either be no or yes, even if it is just a little bit. Then posterior dental crossbite, none, unilateral, bilateral. Then we're looking at overjet. So there are different, there's a drop box where you can choose the overjet. And then we're looking at overbite. So it has, it goes actually from 5 to 25%, edge to edge, greater than 50, 25. So you can choose what the overbite is, or if it's open bite. So there are different numbers for that. Or you can, there's also an option for not applicable. And that's for if let's say they've lost their primary central incisors and the permanent teeth haven't erupted yet. Then once we finish, so that's all on the first page, then it goes to the second page of measurements. And this will make more sense in just a minute. I'll show a couple short little videos, but we're looking at intercanine distance. So for primary teeth, it'll be from C to H, for permanent teeth, 6 to 11. And that is measured from cusp tip to cusp tip. And then for intermolar distance, you know, between the primary second molars or the upper E's from A to J, a number, and then permanent teeth 3 to 14. Those are the first permanent molars. So this, there's also a nice little, like a little tutorial page that will show exactly where these measurements should be taken. So in this first picture right here, I know that Dr. Boyd uses, likes using the calipers or the Bowley gauge to measure intermolar, intercanine distance. So what we're measuring in the primary dentition is between the second primary molars right here, just right at the gingival margin. And then you can see from C to H at the cusp tips. And then for permanent teeth, we're measuring from the distal lingual groove at the gingival margin. So this is a transpalatal measurement. And then for the permanent teeth right there. These are pictures down here that I took from my office. This is how we measure that. So we have these little TRMR tools that we're using, that, you know, to measure tongue tie and things like that, range of motion. But they're really nice because on one end you can put the edge on a cusp tip and just measure, you know, approximately. And that's the thing, you know, whoever is doing this in the office, I really recommend that the main provider is doing this until we have training with other providers, like in my practice, you know, our hygienist. But I, you know, we checked, and Stacy can attest to this. We, I mean, 20, 30, 40 patients, like making sure with, we're within 1 millimeter each time of measuring. So you can see Bolton C to H right here, and then Bogue measurement, the second primary molars right over here. So then the last question, it asks about vertical facial proportion. So they, do they have a short face? Do they have neither a long or short face, or do they have a very long face? So really, are we looking at short face, long face, or neither? So you check that and then click complete. And that's really it. So let me show you a quick video of primary dentition. So this is, if we click through and click primary, you'll see this is exactly what pops up when you're filling this out. So then it goes to the molar relationship we talked about. We really just want to know, are they distal step or not? So there you can click either yes or no. Then lower anterior crowding, and anything with a red star you have to fill out or it won't let you proceed to the next page. So yes or no. And then here we look at, is there a posterior dental crossbite? No. And then if you click unilateral, it comes with an option you can click with the mandibular midline shift. And then same thing with bilateral too. You can click that as well. Then we go to overjet. And once you push on this little drop down, we can see all these different numbers that pop up. So you choose what it is. And then this is with the overbite. So severe, moderate, optimal, edge to edge, open bite, or not applicable. So click that. And then you can click next to go to the next page. So this is where we do the measurements. Remember, we're in the primary dentition here. So we're measuring from C to H. So C before, when I showed the example, it said C to H, 6 to 11 is pretty straightforward. Dr. Simmons and his team, they've done a great job with this programming. And then A to J, and measure that. Those are the second primary molars. And then short face, long face, or neither short nor long. And we're getting there. And then here's a little drop down where you can see how to measure, just to have a refresher. And actually, when you're, if you're training any team members to help with this, they can read and look at this little diagram, which is pretty straightforward. So that to that. And then when you're finished, you click complete. So super exciting. Then with permanent teeth, you'll see, I'm going to click to the permanent dentition next. So we went from primary, oh, just kidding. Hold on. Let's go to the next one. This is permanent. Okay. And let me click play here. All right. So permanent dentition, 1, 2, 3 are edge to edge. And then crowding. When I made this recording, I was trying to be very thorough. So, all right. So lower anterior crowding, no, yes, even slightly. So these are essentially pretty similar until we get to the transverse. So I'll let y'all watch along with me.
Dr. Loria, we have another question in the chat box for you. How do you feel about taking a digital scan and measuring from that versus the traditional paper measuring tool?
I mean, Dr. Boyd, what do you think about that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great. Or even biting on a wax bite. You know, you can get a lot of measure. Like if you're in the field or at a school doing exams or screenings, have them bite on a wax bite and you can measure the cusps of the canines, or as Loria was talking about, the gingival margins of the 6-year molars or the upper second primary molars. You can get a pretty good idea of, you know.
If someone's going to do that, well, let's wait to the QA. Let's go. Let's talk about that. But we'll hold off for a moment.
Okay, so permanent teeth, you see 6 to 11. So it went to the next page, intermolar distance. So since we're in permanent dentition, it only gives you the option of measuring between 3 and 14, and then vertical facial proportion. So we'll go ahead and skip to the last, but not least. And this one has all the extra stuff in it. So not really, but mixed dentition. And then we asked, so there's that question we were talking about, are the upper and lower permanent first molars in occlusion? So if you click no, it only pops up with this right here. Are they in distal step? Yes or no. Okay. Then if we click yes, this is a recording, so I can't make it go any faster. Sorry, guys. So if we click yes, then it gives you what permanent molar relationship are we in? That's what it wants to know. So are we in 1, edge to edge, 2 or 3? The lower anterior crowding, that's all the same. Posterior dental crossbite, same. Overjet, same. So all of this is essentially the same. So we can watch through this. I would forward it, but then it always messes everything up, I feel like, when I do that. Okay. And then this moderate, severe, and deep. And the moderate has been fixed, and it says 5 to 50, but it's 25 to 50. It's been fixed since this recording a couple weeks ago. And okay. Are not applicable. And then we click next. Okay, so in mixed dentition, it's typically C to H are still there because the primary canines are typically the last ones that are exfoliated. And then for intermolar distance, we want to know both primary and permanent measurement. So if we are in permanent teeth, or let's say that the second premolars are erupting, you can measure between the second premolars and put that as the A to J measurement. And then 3 to 14, and then same thing, long, short, or neither. And then click complete. So here's the link to register. You know, it says here, you'll receive one email letting you know your registration is being processed, and another email that has a link to the webpage that we use to enter your patients. And then that'll be the QR generator. So from then on, you'll have that homepage to put in the patient numbers, and that's how you'll get your QR codes or be able to start the questionnaire and have the patient fill it out. And then you fill out the measurements, and they don't have to be done immediately, which is nice. Like at my office, they typically, you know, put them in at the end of the day, and it takes, I mean, just 2 to 3 minutes, if even that, to put in the measurements for each patient. So that is all I have. Again, just to review that.
Wait, go back. So anyone that's interested, then take a picture of this QR code. And you can either go to the QR code now or just take a picture of it and then do it later. The link is, the URL is actually on the bottom there, airwayassessment.azurewebsites.net/register, right? And then you'll fill out certain things. So you're going to pick what kind of practice you have. We want to know what kind of practice, you know, are you a general dentist or a pediatric, maybe you're an ENT, whatever. So you pick the kind of practice you have, and then your address, okay? And then your name, the clinician's name, and then the cell phone. Don't put your office cell phone number here. This is the number we're going to call to reach out to you. But also, you're going to get text messages, possibly. We want to have a way of communicating with you. And then put an email. Don't put the general practice email in here. Put your email, because this is going to be during the onboarding process, right? And then if, let's say, you want to use your office person as a contact person, then you put their name. So if you're going to use, you might use someone else's phone number because you're busy during the day, then put down who, most of the time it might be you, but let's say you're going to delegate this to your office manager, because we have staff now. We have a daytime person that's part of the nonprofit organization, the Sleep Education Consortium, who's going to be following up. So if you register, you're going to get some handholding. There'll be someone that's going to reach out to you. You're going to get an email saying we got the registration. Then she's going to go through, and her name's Mariana, and she's actually a physician from Brazil that's been here for a couple of years and doing research in my office. But so go ahead. She'll reach out and walk you through. We'll have this video, and there's another one similar that was recorded about a week ago that you can use for training purposes. And we'll make sure that, you know, things are going okay. And if there's any hiccups, you'll be able to contact her and get assistance. You know, there's a learning curve like in anything. Don't get intimidated by this. And, Loria, how long do you think it takes for your office to process one patient with this?
Like to put in the measurements?
Yeah. Outside of what you're normally doing within your practice, how much time do you think this adds to the workflow?
Maybe 2 minutes, 3 minutes, like not long. Not, if even that, like Stephanie, she's pretty good about logging in and just putting everything in.
Because you're already doing these kind of measurements as it is, right?
Yes. Yes. We already do. We have that just for our regular, like we have all of these that we're looking at just for regular evaluations, and even on recare, like new patients that come in. So that's the thing too, that Dr. Simmons and Howie were talking about earlier, is that we really want to do these on normals too. So not just patients that are coming in with airway issues. So we do this for every comprehensive new patient. And then afterwards she just goes in and pulls up the information from each patient's chart,
which is very important. So don't use this to say, oh, I think this is one that has an airway problem, so I'm going to have them do CGS. If you really want to do this, we want you to do every consecutive, maybe just new patients. That way that's before they've had any kind of modification. But you could even do people that are partway through, because their measurements are going to be different now that you're doing some changes. So the other thing about this, you're going to enter a record number. You're not going to put their name. This is a study, so that we can't know who the identity is of this individual. So we're recommending that once you get to the QR code generator, this is just to register your clinic. But when you go through it, there's that, you're going to put in the name of the patient. No, sorry, you're going to put in the ID of the patient. So we're recommending that you use your medical record number ID for that patient. That way you could link it to them. And so right there, you would enter the ID of that patient. Now, while you're testing this, put the word test, then any number afterwards, 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever. But start it with test, because we'll go and delete those later, okay? So if you want to practice with this, practice by putting the word test so we can identify which ones to eliminate from our database. And again, it's sort of confusing. What are those emails? You don't put the patient's email on there. Put your office, your front office person possibly, for the email of who's going to get, when you say generate CGS link, it will generate a QR code and go to that email address. Now that then your front office lady may email to the patients that are coming in tomorrow. as one possibility. And you may include a letter that you include into that email. Something, you know, this is, you could use it as a sample letter, print that out, set and use it as your own. And then you can send it out. Those are all different. There's multiple ways of getting the information to the patient. Print it out, add the QR code, just hand it to the mother, you know, and maybe along with the letter that explains what this is for. Okay. The other second email goes to whoever is going to be managing the measurements. I say managing it because you may have it to where you're going to have the back office assistant might be managing it, but you're going to have the hygienist or the dentist actually taking the measurements. And it may be that they may want to write it down on paper because they have gloves on and they may not be able to, because this could go to a phone and maybe they don't want to be able to type it on the phone. So you want it to paper. So once you get that that email that's generated to start that, you could print it out. You know, Lori had talked about that. So you'll print it out and it will have the identification number that you've put into here under the patient's ID. Now, when you're all done, until you do the measurements, you're not going to be able to see what the CGAS question responses were. You're blinded from that until that way you're not going to be biased. It's to prevent bias there. So once the measurements are done, then you see there's a results tab right up there on the top. It says results. That we don't have a slide for that now, but when you press it, it's self-explanatory. You're going to see the different ID numbers and you're going to be able to get print out a PDF of the results. Okay. And you then can scan that up into the patient's chart. So you'll have access to that. But you won't be able to get access into the questionnaire part until you've done the measurements. And that's, you know, any other questions about that, you know, let me know. Now, in terms of the digital scanning, great idea. This came up about a week or so ago when I was talking to a pediatric dentist. What about scans? I think we need to think through a little bit more. I want to validate that this, how well the measurements are done from the scan versus the actual measurements. I mean, maybe you guys are going to say it's a no-brainer. I'm a neurologist, so I don't know. But what we need to do is have a place. We need to put a new variable on here on the measurements to know whether the measurements were done through a scan or manually. And we'll get that in there within the next few days. It will be just an additional question to start off the measurement section to know whether the measurements are from, you know, again, from the scan. And I want to just make sure that we're going to be able to get all of the, even, you know, the class relationship and everything else from the scan.
If we want to, let's say our goal is 100 practitioners, how many patients would we like from each practitioner?
Well, you know, it would be great if each, I mean, if let's say you do this for, you know, a couple months, then you say, okay, I'm tired, I want to stop doing it. I mean, if we can get, a couple hundred patients from each practice, I mean, I don't know how many new patients typical practice sees. I would like us to have several thousand patients, the data from several thousand patients to do the analysis with. Now, in the real world scenario, ideally, we'd like this to go to primary care. You know, if let's say there were 2,000 patients, and let's say we had, you know, 400 that were, you know, like 20% that were going to be abnormal. But we don't have access to motivated, you know, most kids don't have these kind of abnormalities. I mean, really, what are the statistics? This is actually going to maybe help figure that out. But the thing is, we don't want majority of abnormal cases. In the real world, we want the majority to be normal. And so what the people that are here don't represent the normal population. You're getting the patients that have problems and you're focusing in on them. And, you know, I'm sure there are some primary care dentists here that this maybe only represents a small part of the practice. And maybe you're just sort of checking it in because you thought this was sort of interesting. To be honest with you, you're the ones that are most important to this endeavor. Okay. So So you go to the Endeavor meeting for our Endeavor, but we want normals. And because that's going to really be helpful. That's why we have to categorize your practice.
So there's a question about if they're having an orthodontic intervention already, do we want to include that? Are there any kids or categories that we want to exclude from doing this screening?
You know, I don't know that we want to exclude them, but we just have to be able to know that. I don't remember if we actually put, did we put it? At one point we had a question in there saying, are they currently in undergoing any kind of intervention? If not, we need to add that question back in real quick because I mean, we're just starting to launch this thing. We've been talking about this a long time ago, but we're just launching this now really with the measurements as we speak. So we're going to add that question in there. We need to know. So we could then on those, we might put them into a separate category and then we can maybe do a deeper dive and ask questions subject, you know, ZZ1257, you know, give us some more information about that. Whatever, we may at some point do that. So right now I say, let's do everybody, but let's make sure that we have within the next 2 days, we'll have that. And then also the digital scan question in there.
And all the kids need to be between 2 and 12.
Correct. Right. And you could use it. You could do a before and after too. This thing will accept more than one measurement on the same individual. It's timestamped, so you put in the same ID number, but we'll be able to make the distinction that of when it was done. And there's another study down the pike, which was not well formulated yet. We're in the early stages where we're looking for kids that are going to clearly go through some orthodontic intervention, interceptive, orthodontics to. We want to be doing sort of assessments with a series of questions before and then a year and a half, whatever, later when it's done, because we're going to look for behavioral changes, clinical changes, specifically in that population. That's a different study. Stay tuned. You may have an opportunity to participate in that, but this is a more screening study. So,
Jerry, what over what period of time would you like the study to run and collect the data? We're talking about 3 months, 6 months, a year?
You know, once someone gets into the flow, you might want to have this data yourself. It's going to become part of your record. So I don't say stop. Stop if you find it's really a burnout. Uh-huh. And if you're a primary general clinician and you don't necessarily want to go through all of it, you're doing it for a while because you want to help the cause.
For your collection of the data, you get enough data to publish a paper.
I want to have at least 2,000.
Jerry, I think you bring up a good point here, is that, you know, these metrics that we're asking people to get for CGASP, if you're treating children, and if you're treating children according to standards of care from the Academy of Pediatric Dentistry, these are metrics that you should have in your chart anyway. You should be getting primary and permanent molar relationship, canine relationship, overbite, overjet. Does the kid have a midline deviated crossbite, posterior? These are things that if you're going to be seeing children and you're like wanting to be at least up to the standards of American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry.
We just lost Kevin. He froze.
I want to add on to what Kevin's saying, because yes, those standards are there for pediatric dentistry. Why are they there? They're there to evaluate tooth alignment and development that way. By adding CGASP to this whole project, we help to get practitioners to think about airway support, about bone shape, about how the whole physiology works together, not just about the tooth focus. And so we're enlarging people's point of view by tying these two things together. And I think that's fantastic for our goals here, our vision, our aim at getting community health built better.
Well, and also starting at age 2 for this inclusion criteria of the project, really, the Academy of Pediatric Dentistry says A child should establish a dental home by or before age one. So because we're saying for the purposes of, you know, this study that we're doing, validation study, 2 years old is kind of too late to see a child for their first initial exam, even though they don't qualify to be in our, you know, validation study. If you're treating children, you should offer parents of prospective patients that please bring them in by or before age one. They don't need to have a lot of teeth. They just have to have a mouth and they qualify to be examined. So for oral health, not just dental health, okay?
So again, enlarging our scope to think past the teeth. And I think, you know, everybody on this call understands that, but many of our colleagues are trained more traditionally, and they see the teeth as the end point of the benchmark. And yes, that's the part that's visible. That's the part we can approach. That's the part we can put a scale on and measure C to H. But what we want everybody to be thinking about is the behavioral aspect, the functional aspect of this craniofacial respiratory complex. And that's where considering a CGASP as part of their everyday practice makes them think about airway and function and long and health span over time. That's the key right there.
So before everybody starts to leave the webinar, could you put in the chat box if you think you would like to participate, so you get some idea of how enthusiastic and motivated we've gotten everybody. And which would be great. And I just want to mention that how much work went into just creating this form. What Steve has done with the ADA, Jerry running this committee, we would have meetings that just, we talked for hours on just one question, tweaking the questions. And then Kevin and Bill Harrell, the orthodontist, looks a little like Santa Claus sitting at the North Pole and is back there, putting together the screening questions.
You mean the measurements?
The measurements.
The measurements.
So much work went into this just to prepare this for you. And then Loria practicing doing a trial run in her office to see how easy, how difficult it is. And you know, if she can do it in 2 minutes, maybe it'll take you three or whatever. And Stacy, who's worked, actually was a hygienist in Loria's office, and she knows pretty well that this is really easy to do, and the more you do, the easier it gets. And now Stephanie, whose picture is here, who's taking over more of the ministry liaisons, we want to get all our liaisons doing that. Wouldn't it be great if we can do a study with several thousand patients?
Let me, I'm looking at the question here. Someone's talking about the Ferris 6 versus the CGASP, and should we replace this? They're two different things.
Right.
Ferris 6 does not have a goal as a goal to be implemented in the school by the school nurses to screen kids. It's meant for people that are coming to your office that probably already have an airway problem. You know, you're trying to do a deeper dive, but it's meant to be done by some dental professional. Right now, CGASP is being evaluated by dental professionals with the hope that it will go beyond the dental office. It has as a goal to go out to the general community, but it has to start somewhere. So don't stop doing the Ferris 6. It's going to give you different data, all right?
This isn't like what church you belong to, what screening form. It's not one or the other. We want to come up with the simplest, most accurate form that any healthcare practitioner
accurate. No, don't say accurate. It's not. It's something that's validated as a screener. Screens are sensitive, but they're not specific, and you're going to get false positives, which is okay. If you get too many false positives, then you haven't really screened, you haven't reduced the burden. So the measurements, because I want to make sure it's not
a accurate that it works.
Right.
But
I want to make something real clear because I want to make sure that no one loses out this concept. In its final implementation, there'll be five questions. That's it. There will not be measurements. You could do measurements, but that we need those now. We're validating the questions to the measurements. Ultimately, when this is done, be five questions. What we have now is if any of those five are positive, there are breakout questions so we can understand our five questions better. In the final implementation, there will not be breakout questions. It will just be five questions, all right? That's it. Like, which five questions, if you had to ask, which ones would you ask? Well, we've spent a lot of time to try to say, these are the five. And bedwetting is not one of them. Well, you say, we're all going to sit there and say, well, we know that bedwetting can be a problem. But it's positive too often. It doesn't help you whittle it down. If bedwetting is the only problem and there's none of these other things, it's probably not related to sleep. But bedwetting will be in a conjunction with some of the other things. So we have some of the other things that are embedded within our questionnaire. But bedwetting, when you're talking about ages 2 through 12, it was going to not serve our ultimate goal of whittling down screening, but at the same time, not being too sensitive. So
all of you on the call can understand the nature of developing a five-question questionnaire is not a simple process. When you have deep thinkers like Dr. Simmons and Nicole Goldfarb and Lori and Howie, and I mean, there was 20 people, I think, task force and of all different descriptions, and everybody's focused on the same outcome, but the nuances of getting to that outcome required, gosh, Jerry, what, a couple years of meetings before the five questions became available. And did you notice when Laura was showing those questions, the support documents that were listed there? That alone takes a lot of work to get done. So I'm so thrilled with the work of the Children's Airway Screener Task Force that headed by Dr. Simmons, but contributed to by so many passionate people. And that's where all of you that are volunteering to come along with this, and I can't imagine somebody more excited about this than Callie Hale down in Houston, and who's going to be a champion of all of these things. All of us getting excited about this are going to be supported by all this amazing work that's being done by CAST. And so this is righteous work here that we're all getting started in. So I'm just thrilled with how things are going. And in your practices, when you start doing this, don't forget your social media. You can use this to say, look, I'm part of a big picture. I'm part of a movement. I'm part of trying to make our communities healthier. And so we're all looking for ways to differentiate our practices. Why not use something as positive as all of this?
And another reminder is February is Children's Dental Health Month. And a lot of hospitals go to schools and educate on that. And this is a great opportunity to kind of put some feelers out and see how well it's responded to.
Peter Beckwith, I'm interested in your thoughts about that part right there.
What Stacey just said?
Yeah, the differentiation, the marketing aspect of it.
So Dr. Nahadis is very humble, but I don't think anybody does a better job than she does at establishing thought leadership through specific facts and credentials, as opposed to kind of in a, you know, more prideful way where we're talking about how great we are, right? She always, if you follow Loria, and I suggested that you all do in the last email that I sent out, in her posting, and sorry, I know I hate it when people do this to me, Loria, I'm going to talk about you while you're here, but in her posting, what she does is that she lets you know what her personality is all about, what the field of practice is all about, that there is pediatric dentistry there, but then she also peppers in the things you're talking about, Steve, which is what makes the practice different. And that's very specific in research, technology, innovations, compassion, and diagnostics and treatment protocols that they use that sets themselves apart from other practices. And it's why they do so well. So that's a long answer to a short question. If you can back up your passion with specifics, that will create value in people that see you, and they will not just be attracted to you as a human, but will also respect you as a practitioner and a thought leader and somebody on the leading edge of medicine. And I think Loria does a great job with that.
So everybody on this, all our panelists have done incredible amount of work, put in a lot of time. So now we need all of you to pitch in, and then we try to make it easy. I can picture having thousands of patient data to publish a paper. That'll be fantastic. And Jerry has promised me for this, he won't be late.
I'm trying, but you know, it takes resources. So, you know, I've dedicated some of my staff, but we're also, there's fundraising efforts to, you know, for this as well. And
so I'm working on the fundraising part. I would ask anybody who wants to participate to also make a donation to, you know, it's not required, but make a donation of a couple $100, because the more we have donations from within, the easier it is for me to go out and get money from outside sources.
And so we were able to get a donation a while back through another nonprofit organization, CAF, and that's what helped get us. And then also the Foundation of Airway Health and also my practice. We all made donations to get the computer programming part of this done. Yeah. So we, you know, the digitization of this took an outside programmer that we have working with us to continue this. And I
mentioned before we came on, I said that I already have a commitment of $10,000 to $12,000 towards this project, and our goal is to raise $100,000 so we can do this and maybe even have money left over for the next step, because the one of the biggest things lacking in what we do and the great results we see, we don't have the papers, we don't have the research behind us. This will go a long way in making it in getting that done. Well, this is a good way to start our webinars again after our break.
But there was a question about crossbite. There's an option for crossbite or just posterior.
What about a buccal crossbite as opposed to Kevin, Bill, you have an answer to that question?
What? Say it again. Buccal crossbite versus
one of the questions on this is
about a posterior
crossbite, and the question was, what about a buccal crossbite?
A buccal crossbite or reverse crossbite just means that you have lingual version of the lower posterior segments. Every kid who's maxillary transverse deficient will have a crossbite if you upright the posterior teeth on the mandible. That's a little complicated, but you don't need a cross, and a buccal crossbite is nothing. If you create a buccal crossbite, you've done no harm. It will normalize.
Is, in answer to that question, crossbite, does a buccal crossbite count as a crossbite?
Yes, of course it does. Yes, okay. It does.
Anterior.
That the problem is all mostly in the lower. The maxilla is probably, you know, transverse deficient, but the lower is extremely transverse deficient. As in all crossbites or non-cross. When there's maxillary transverse deficiency, the lower jaw is always, and Mariana Evans talks about lower incisor crowding, primary or permanent, 100% of the time, according to Peter Bouchang, means you have maxillary skeletal transverse deficiency, whether you have a posterior crossbite or not. So it's just, suffice it to say, you do not need any kind of a crossbite, buccal, unilateral, posterior rate. Maxillary transverse deficiency is measured on the maxillary jaw. And if you have no primate spacing, if you have no incisor spacing, you've got transverse deficiency, always, 100% of the time.
And one final question for the panel. Now we're going to have parents filling out this 5-question screening. And a lot of these questions are something they never considered. And then they may ask, what does it mean? Does my kid have a problem? What do I do? Should I do something? Where do I go? how would you suggest those questions be dealt with?
Have an evaluation done.
Well,
go and, you know, it not only a dental examination, but radiographs. Every child by age four should have a Panorex. And, you know, we talked about that at the ADA. The radiation is not, it's not to be cavalier about. All ionizing radiation is something to be careful with. But the information that you get, 7 microsieverts, is what is delivered by a standard, you know, Panorex or a low dose cone beam. 7 microsieverts, that's sieverts, that's 2 days of outdoor sunshine. It's not harmful. And the information you can get relative to vertical growth sensitivity, relative to transverse deficiency, is really valuable. Certainly before the age of 6, every child should have at least a Panorex.
Oria, what do you do for the parents who say, okay, now what?
We just ask more questions and try to guide them in the right direction. You know, I mean, sometimes they could benefit from, and we do expansion in our office, so it's kind of not fair to ask a question, but expansions, myofunctional therapists, send them to speech language pathologists. Do they need feeding therapy? Do they need to talk to their pediatrician about maybe seeing an ENT? I mean, there's so many different things, so we can just kind of help guide the parents. It's not that we're going to take care of it, but we can definitely be there for them and help them out. Did that answer your question?
Simmons, you do pediatric sleep test.
So obviously, you know, we're going to do a full deep dive into their sleep pathology. Or it might be that the parent isn't really that attuned to what's going on with sleep, but their behavioral problems during the day. They're, one of the questions pertains to daytime dysfunction. So a common scenario would be the child's being diagnosed with ADD, ADHD symptoms, and they're on that road that's taking them towards stimulant medications. So it's easy for those people that are in my geographical area, because we go through this pretty thoroughly, and we'll try to, you know, get the parents to hold off on any medication management until we've assessed sleep, and then make sure that we've optimized their sleep, and then we can see where the child is at.
But is it okay with we as oral health professionals, dentists, tell people to hold off when a physician has
prescribed? No, that's the word. Not yet. Maybe in about 5 years from now, or maybe sooner, let's get this data. There's another study that I may alluded to, Kevin, before you came on. It was talking about how there's another study that's being developed in terms of its protocol. Kevin's part of the panel that's putting this together, where we're looking at, does these interventions of the skeletal structure that could open up the airway, is that changing the behavior? Once those studies are done, we're going to have more ammunition to where the dentist can halt it. But I think it makes sense for the dentist at this point to put the bug in the parent's ears that there may be other reasons. So seek out medical attention. You can refer them to, we do telemedicine. I've seen people from all over the country, and it's not just me. You know, I don't want to be the bottleneck to my practice. So I have 6 nurse practitioners. So, you know, but not everyone's going to come our way, but there are other talented people out there that are onto the same realization of this association between ADHD symptoms and sleep pathology. And so, but you should tell the parents, you know, look at other options. Now, depending on your community, it will determine what resources you actually have currently. And there's a major deficit of people that really know. Pediatricians don't know. So what you could do, let me know if you need this, because the pediatricians a lot of times will stifle the whole process, because the parent's going to go back and take this information and go to the pediatrician and convey what you just taught them, and the pediatrician is going to discredit everything you just said. So we put together a link, a QR code that goes to a little video that I recorded that would explain to the parents why they need to listen to the dentist, and why the pediatrician may not understand these issues, how it's not taught in medical school, how it's not currently taught in pediatric teaching programs. And so you cannot judge what your dentist told you by going back to your pediatrician. And that they're, and so I hit that right on the nail so that the parents don't make the same mistake. And then they think that the, you know, they're going to listen to the pediatrician, obviously, over the dentist, but I'm a physician, I'm a neurologist, and I'm going to give you more support. Let me know. I don't have a, I can't put this link on here, but I'll get it to Howie and he can get it out to everybody. The link that goes to that little.
going forward, if people want to get on board and do this and they need some coaching, we can do a webinar on that, or just how to go through the screening process. Maybe we can.
And if you're really motivated to learn more, in April, there's going to be a 3-day conference on sleep disorders, not just dentistry. You're going to learn
about where is that going to be?
It's going to be in Houston.
Oh, don't you have, isn't your practice in Houston, Jerry?
Yeah. Oh, actually, it's going to be the sleep education. It's the Sleep Education Consortium. That we could put on the, we could put on here. Actually, through the AMPMD, you've got to the end of this month, and you're going to get early bird pricing with an additional discount if you sign up for this. Here, put it into the chat. The dentalsleepconference.com, www.dentalsleepconference.com. And then the AAPMD is going to send out something with the discount code before the end of the month. They're going to do an email about the conference. And like I said, register before the end of the month. You get, there's already a discount that's going to end, like I said, at the end of the month. And then you'll get an additional discount through the AAPMD. And you put in the code.
Okay.
3-day conference. So it'll be hands-on. You're going to learn about, actually, so, this is Stanley Liu is now on the faculty, and Mariana Evans, Kevin, and Audrey Yoon is on the faculty this year also. So we're going to have and a lot of other people as well. And
anyway,
I'm twisting.
It's a great way to come back and start our webinars. It's really that my goal is that we should take our great community, put our heads together, put our energy together, and go out and do something to change the world, not just take courses and argue about things. I mean, this is such a fantastic project, and we can make such a difference in the world. And I see big smile on Steve's face because he started this, and I think he was a little bit, where is it going? It's not moving along. And I just love making Steve happy because I love that smile.
All right, Howie.
All right, let's say goodnight.
Night.
Late here on the East Coast. Anybody that has any questions, contact the APMD office or anybody. We're all here to help you. We want everybody to be involved. Good night, everybody.
Good night,
everybody. Good night. Thank you.
Good job.